the Best of Nerd and Ty Year One, a special episode collecting your favorite and our favorite moments from the last year of Nerd and Ty. I'm Trey Dorn, one of your co-hosts. Throughout this episode, you're also going to hear Professor Fursters and the splendiferous Nick Izumi. It's exciting. I know you're excited. I know at the very least I'm excited. You know, it was almost exactly a year ago in a Dickies in Wausau, Wisconsin, that I sat down with Nick Izumi and Fursters during WasabiCon, a convention which did not take place this year in 2014, so I'm very sad about that. But I said to them, hey, why aren't we doing a podcast? And they looked at me and said, why aren't we doing a podcast? And that's how Nerd and Ty came about. It was guys eating pulled pork sandwiches in a chain barbecue place in Wausau, where none of us live. It's very exciting. Anyways, we couldn't do a regular episode this week because of technical circumstances, so we decided that the best thing to do was release our best moments over the past year and share them with you. There will be a regular episode next weekend. We're just going to shift the fortnights over starting next weekend. And that'll also coincidentally make it so when GeekCon rolls around in several weeks, we will be likely doing a live episode there. And we'll have more details on that as time goes by. Anyways, throughout these clips, you're going to hear a sound which can only be described as the choir of Vomit Hat Steve's dividing them, and that will make sense if you know what Vomit Hat Steve sounds like. If you don't know what Vomit Hat Steve sounds like, just believe me that that's what it sounds like. I also apologize for the varying sound quality throughout this episode. We, over the last year, have had various incarnations of equipment, both good and bad. Our live episodes are always a little sketchy too. So, again, that's just the wonderful thing. So, from here, I will stop rambling on and let you get to it and take it away with a little Choir of Steve intro. Whoa!
Someone thought I was under 18 today.
We got a lot to talk about. I have no idea the transition.
I don't know. I want to hear that story now.
Yeah,
that's
200 words or less.
I need to know what happened.
I'll say it's weirder than it sounds. The lady at Woodman's would not give pizza samples to anyone under the age of 18, and she wanted proof that I was over the age of 18. She did not believe me.
Oh, I thought it was going to be something like you were buying like some alcohol for somebody or something like that, or you're having a nice wine date night.
The free pizza lady at Woodman's did not believe that I was 18.
This is the best story ever. This makes me so happy.
Dear God.
For those listening at home, I'm 24, actually.
And he does not look like he doesn't look old, but he looks his age.
He looks younger. He looks older than 18. I don't.
He looks like a 24-year-old. I mean,
that was my day today.
Oh my God, that makes me so happy.
That just picked me up. Like you have no idea.
Get this. I get to talk about Tokusatsu tonight, which I almost never get to do on this show.
Because we don't know anything about it.
Yeah, Nick, I'm just going to like sit back and let Nick do his thing.
Nick gets to talk about Tokusatsu for the next 10 minutes.
So Tokusatsu, for those who don't know, is Japanese special effects shows. It's the same genre that the shows that Power Rangers were adapted from came from, Super Sentai. And there's... While a lot of Americans weren't familiar with what tokusatsu even was until the Power Rangers boom in the 90s, the fact is that there have been some toku shows that have been available, but only on coastal states or in Hawaii.
Did you just say available?
No.
What? Yes.
No, I don't think he did.
Available?
Nick said available.
Nick, continue.
Anyway.
Ignore Trey.
Now you're going to mix my words. Anyway, so So yeah, back in the 70s, especially in Hawaii, a bunch of toku shows were broadcast with English subtitles. And one of those tokusatsu heroes, some of the bigger ones like Kamen Rider were broadcast, never really got a huge following. But one who was always kind of a C-lister in Japan has an incredible track record over here, and that's Kikaider. Kikaider is this ugly as hell, half red, half blue, homeless robot who's who is sad because he has a conscience chip.
I'm sorry. I had no idea the premise of this show until you just said it.
Yeah,
man.
So basically, Kikaider is like a badass remake of Pinocchio meets Blade Runner.
Homeless robot.
What?
What?
He's a homeless robot.
How do you get a homeless robot? What society builds robots and then kicks them on the streets?
Did you never watch Futurama, Trey? It's plausible.
Well,
there are all sorts of homeless robots on that show. Continue, Nick.
Well, okay, to give, I guess, a better explanation of why Jiro's in such a bad spot. Jiro is a robot, also known as Kikaider, which is a really stupid name pun. Kikai being machine, and the English word rider, so machine rider, Kikaider.
Does he ride a machine?
Yes, he does.
Okay, good.
He rides a motorcycle because Kamen Rider was freaking huge. And the same creator, Shotaro Ishinomori, said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So yeah,
but
it's,
if he's not broke, why is he living on the streets?
Well,
sorry.
So, anyway, Jiro is a robot who was created by this brilliant inventor named, Professor Komiyoji. And Komiyoji is this robotic scientist who is also into environmentalism. At least this was the original version. And he gets backed by this guy named Gil Helbert, which sounds a lot like Hellbent. At least I think that was the joke, because they're into not-so-subtle name puns in this show. And Gil makes Komiyoji build a bunch of evil robots. So then Komiyoji builds Kikaider and gives him a conscience circuit called a Gemini, which, again, it sounds like Jiminy, like Jiminy Cricket. And they keep making a reference
to the twins, you know, of Gemini and the fact that he has two halves.
It's a double meaning there, because it's he does have two halves, but there's this double meaning thing going on. They keep bringing up Pinocchio throughout the story. Like the story of Pinocchio, he was a wooden puppet who became a real boy. And Kikaider, it's the same thing.
At least Kikaider wasn't made of wood.
Well, yeah, he's not made of wood, but he's got.
Although if he was smart, he'd sell one of his legs, replace it with a wooden one, and use the money to finance an apartment.
Well, here's the thing, though. Kikaider is he's all sad and stuff because he has this conscience circuit, and you know, suddenly giving a creature that's otherwise very intelligent, like, an understanding of right versus wrong is really upsetting. So in the early parts of the story, he immediately runs away from home.
Wait, I have a question.
Yes.
Why does giving him a conscience make him sad? I have a conscience, and I'm quite happy most of the time.
I'm oversimplifying it for the sake of time, but...
Did he kill his creator?
Actually, no.
Okay, that's disappointing. That would have made sense.
It's more that every other robot that he runs into tells him that he's broken because he doesn't just simply go along with the orders that he's given.
Why does that make... Okay, so everyone telling him he's broken sounds like a reason to be depressed, but I don't think that has anything to do with his conscience.
I think
we need to get him on an antidepressant like Prozac. Or Razafon, or something else.
Or he just needs to drink more. Or drink less. I forget how it works with robots.
God. I'm never going to get anywhere. Well, anyway.
This is the most time we've let you talk about tokusatsu on the show ever.
Well, thank you.
or
and
whatever.
I'm interested in hearing it, but Trey, you keep interrupting.
I can't even say the thing right.
Tokusatsu, yes.
Tokusatsu.
Anyway, Kikaider's an interesting series, partly because it's so frackin' popular, but also because, before I guess I get to why it's in the news again, but it's not just popular, but it's been really weirdly successful here in the United States. Like I said, the original live-action TV series from the 70s broadcast in Hawaii, and you can buy it on seriously overpriced DVDs. The anime adaptation from the 2000s got released over here and actually ran on Cartoon Network. Both Kikaider manga have been translated and are available. One of them, the remake manga, was released through a DC sub company.
Imprint.
And Comixology, you can download the original 70s manga there. So Kikaider's just an interesting tokusatsu character because he's available here in the States, and it's not an Americanized version of it. It's always the actual original version.
He's available and
yes.
Homeless and sad.
He's
Wait, he's homeless, but he has a motorcycle.
He has a motorcycle.
It really
Where does he keep the motorcycle?
He rides on it.
Well,
it's how he gets from point A to point B.
But he has to, like, does he do anything away from the motorcycle?
When you're a hero of justice, you don't have time to park your motorcycle, Trey. This is just how it works.
I'm just very confused. The entire premise of this series hurts me.
Like just...
I have been assaulted by the Japanese.
It really is a fun little series. Like I said, the theme of what makes someone human. I've mentioned on the show before, I'm kind of into that robot science fiction where robots start asking what's the line between robot and human. It explores that pretty well. It has some interesting ideas. Anyway, Kikaider is getting a movie reboot over in Japan, and the costumes for the new show were leaked. And I frankly think they look really, really cool.
They look like robots.
Jiro still looks fugly as all get out, but that's actually a plot point. Like, the fact that his robot, he does have a human, like a form where he's disguised, where he looks human.
Wait, he turns into a person?
He can look human. He doesn't.
Do people, okay, so he can appear human, and that's fine, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Is this supposed to disguise him?
Yes.
But nobody notices he's driving the same motorcycle all the time.
Well, the disguise is more so he can just, you know, walk around among people.
So he does get off the motorcycle.
He does get off the motorcycle occasionally.
Where does he park it?
I don't know. In parking lots, I guess. he turns into the ugly robot in order to fight because he fights better when he's in full robot mode. Because that
does he follow traffic laws or
yes and no.
How does he pay the registration on his motorcycle?
I don't. It's registered.
How does he not get pulled over constantly, then?
How does Batman not get pulled over constantly?
Because he's Batman.
They
try
to pull him over. Didn't you see Batman Begins? He has to drive on rooftops to get away from the cops because he doesn't have a
registered
vehicle.
He's often on the run from the cops. It's part of why he's so sad. Anyway, but yeah, we
it's
know.
Like Renegade. If Renegade was a robot.
I hate you guys all so much right now.
And Bobby Two Feathers was the guy who made him and put the Gemini chip in his head.
It's okay, Nick.
It's actually in his heart. It's not in his head. It's like where his heart would be. It's thematic.
Hey, can I just, like, you know...
Trey's the nerd talked about Farscape for 5 minutes.
Can I get credit for knowing the name of characters on Renegade?
No.
Because I haven't watched Renegade for, like, a decade. Actually, I might have gotten that character's name wrong.
Well, anyway, so the new Kikaider reboot is coming out sometime within this year. I'm excited. The costume for Jiro's robot mode looks fantastic. And my personal favorite villain in all of fiction, I'm serious when I say this, my favorite villain in all of fiction, Hawkeiter, Jiro's rival, and again, stupid name pun, Hawkeye, Japanese for destroy, Eider Rider, Destruction Rider, is also appearing, and his costume looks so 70s, I can't deal with it. I'm very excited for this.
I need to make a correction. The character on Renegade was not Bobby Two Feathers, he was Bobby Six Killer.
I hate you so much right now.
So I think it's time for rampant speculation.
Wild speculation.
All right, so for those of you at home,
Why did you point at the audience when we said for those of you at home?
Because
I highly doubt these fine people live in this resort.
Actually, Archimedes sometimes sleeps over there. I've seen him do it.
Well, no, I always gesture like that when I say that when we're recording, but you guys just can't see it.
You point out like this when you're recording.
Do you point at your wife when you do that? Like, just Krista?
No, she's in the living room.
Krista, you stay office. Right there. You're my audience while I'm recording this. You at home.
We release these episodes on Sunday nights, and this one's going to be no different. This episode's not going to get released until I get home from this convention. But we're recording it at, right now it's 10:30 a.m. on Saturday morning.
The 23rd, the day of the 50th anniversary, which means that
airs
the special
this afternoon.
3 hours? 4 hours?
I don't remember if what I'm remembering is the Eastern or Central time zone time slot for the show. Anyways, this afternoon, hours from now.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet. Nobody has seen it yet.
But it would be really amiss for us not to talk about the 50th anniversary special.
So what we're going to do is speculate based on nothing but what comes into our brain parts.
We're going to tell you what happens in the episode without ever having seen it, knowing only the basic guest star list and science.
So, what I'm going to assume is going to happen is we're going to start off with the episode. We're going to be in the alternate dimension that
well, because, yeah, they're still in the time, in the Doctor's time
stream. They're in the time stream.
The name of the Doctor.
Yeah. So, but this is before the whole events, I think, happen where Rose gets lost in the Bad Wolf Bay or whatever. It's going to happen before that. However, she will have been away from the 10th Doctor for quite some time to pursue her career as a pop star. As we can see, based on the images that we've seen come out of the promo stuff, it is not going well, and she's been in rehab for quite some time.
What?
Have you seen the images? She looks like she's just, like, been digging around in a dumpster for about 3 weeks.
Wow! Wow!
Now, I was going to make jokes about Billy Piper's teeth, but not anymore. That was just too low.
But, no, the 10th Doctor comes and rescues Rose Tyler out of rehab.
You hate
and,
women!
We're going wildly speculating here. I'm just going as wild as I possibly can. Rose Tyler had a failed pop star career. I'm not saying Billy Piper did. They're different people. She's an actress.
Trey, do your thing. First, stop talking.
Okay. That's how it's going to open, though. That's exactly how it's going to open. Ted is going to come rescue Rose Tyler.
I disagree entirely. It's going to open in the time stream. The Doctor is slowly sipping a cup of tea. Clara is staring at him, going, "Shouldn't we get out of here?" And he says, "No." That's the cold open, right there.
And then 10.
Flashback.
And then 10 saves Rose Tyler from rehab.
No. The year is 2006. And it's, that's the Rose 10 season. The year is 2006, and, I don't know. They're leaving New York
again. Why not?
And TARDIS has the cloister bell go off because that's what happens when bad things happen.
Yep.
The Eye of Harmony is opening. It turns out that Eric Roberts playing Bruce, former host of The Master, has been trapped in the Eye of Harmony this whole time.
Oh, no.
And he's pissed.
John Hurt then wanders on the set asking where his rent check is.
I'm getting there.
He worked on I, Claudius. I'm getting there.
So they discover Bruce, and they realize that they have disrupted a fixed time in space because Bruce was supposed to have died back in 1999, filmed in 96.
Everything in the late 90s was filmed on took place on New Year's Eve. It just happened.
Yeah, because the Eighth Doctor movie takes place in 1999.
He partied on New Year's Eve
as one Mr. Philip J. Fry gets frozen in the cryo.
Right. Well, anyways, so they have to return Eric Roberts as Bruce back to before the Time War. And by doing so, they accidentally intercept Eleven and Clara in the time stream. And thus, crash into the Time War where John Hurt stubs his toe. And only Eric Roberts can save 10, 11, Clara, and Rose from the War Doctor.
John, at this same time, John Hurt is actually trying to force Derek Jacobi, who they somehow got back as the Master, who is quite shocked to see... What was Eric Roberts' character's name?
Bruce.
Yeah, who is quite shocked to see Bruce, his former incarnation, and is hoping that he has double master powers now. But things get really bad when the Yetis show up.
Nowhere. Because we've had the Great Intelligence, and he's been in the time stream, so of course
the Yetis are there.
In the time stream. So the Yetis show up completely out of nowhere with like these super time guns, and they're kicking the Daleks' butts everywhere.
And for some reason, and one of the Yetis is wearing Troughton's fur coat. Just as a shout-out to the old fans.
No. The shout-out that's going to happen is that you're going to see a Quark wandering around in the background.
And an original...
Get on it, Moffat. We need the Quarks.
And an original series Cyberman wets his pants.
And then, what's going to happen?
And then, David Tennant and Matt Smith go around yelling wibbly wobbly timey wimey at each other for like 20 minutes. And it's just that.
Yeah.
And then, at some point in the episode, 10 yells Geronimo.
And 11
yells LNZ.
And then they both look at each other. Rose and Clara are going to be looking at each other like, do you see what I put up with all the time? It's going to be hysterical.
And then 10 and 11 make out.
It's just going to be them making out for 15 minutes.
And then John Hurt will get rid of
it. And then John Hurt joins in.
Then Colin Baker's going to show up. Everyone's going to look at him and yell, you get out of here.
Out of my cannon.
He's going to get retconned out of existence.
Well, actually, here's the thing. Okay, so though we're going to have... Okay, so Peter Capaldi is the 12th Doctor, the 13th Fast. But they need to... So Peter Capaldi is going to be the 13th face of the character, the 12th Doctor. He's supposed to then be the final regeneration because after 12 regenerations, 13th face. Well, here's my thought. What happens if... The Time War somehow, the interference in the Time War by 10 and 11 causes all the regenerations back to Davison to revert. And Capaldi then regenerates from the Fifth Doctor, eliminating Colin Baker!
That'll teach you not to complain about being in the 50th, Colin.
And I know Paul McGann's not been asked to be involved. Paul McGann just ain't telling you shit, Colin.
to their credit, like...
Technically, he's not in the 50th.
It blows my mind that they were able to keep it secret.
He was on set for 2 days.
Yeah.
And the press asked him, and he said, oh, no. I was just in costume for fun. I don't know what you're talking about.
Which, I mean, I just imagine that Paul McGann is at home, just on his days off, running around as the Eighth Doctor. Just, someday I'll get a call back. I'll be on screen again.
Every day when he gets home, he says hi to his wife, but then like calls his agent. Hey, did the Doctor Who guys call back yet? Paul, you ask this literally every day at 3:00. So yes or no?
Colin and Peter might have given up on life, but I haven't.
Well, you know, I mean, although it's to be fair, Peter Davison has reappeared in the new series.
They didn't have an comeback.
He looks okay.
Yeah.
So that's, well, he was even at Dragon Con doing the 11th Doctor speech from the Pandorica opens,
and that was awesome. That was great.
But anyway, wild speculation. I don't know. Yaya Han's gonna be involved in this.
Yeah, no, Yaya Han.
They're gonna crash into a convention. Yaya Han's gonna be there, and she's gonna criticize their outfits for not being accurate.
And then she gets killed by a Dalek.
Yes, because she's not good enough for the Yetis.
Yetis.
No. She doesn't deserve
Yetis riding
yeti.
Daleks. Yetis riding Daleks.
If you would like to draw Yetis riding Daleks, please go to contact.thonline.com.
No, nerdanti.thonline.com/contact.
Click on the contact form, something, write to us of Yetis riding Daleks. Nick's just giving up at this point. He's done.
You messed this up twice.
I'm
like
going
within
to mess
20
it up
minutes
always.
Of each other.
He's determined to never.
Never going to get it right. That's the point.
Okay.
You're a horrible human being.
So the 50th anniversary, there you go. Don't even have to watch it.
We explained it. It's going to be... nothing is going to make sense up until the 59th minute when they're going to hit a magic button and everything is going to be okay.
No, Stephen Moffat, don't! Whoa!
Brian, if you're listening to this, we've got problems and we need to fix them.
Stop writing fan fiction. There's your problem.
Yeah, seriously, I think your first problem is writing fan fiction, Nick. All right, to be fair,
I
show
not
of hands,
offend, I don't
who's written a fan fiction.
Fan fiction? Everyone has written fan fiction.
Yeah.
Who is on this panel. I used to write fan fiction when I was much younger. There's nothing wrong with writing fan fiction.
Mine was
there's
a drunken second
wrong.
Doctor fic that will never see the light of day ever.
I wrote,
mine is a comic that's up on DeviantArt, and it's god awful.
I wrote some Ranma One Half fan fiction in the mid 90s.
Wait, really?
yes.
I just the image of. I'm sorry.
And I wrote Transformers fanfic at one point for a while. Beast Machines Transformers fanfic, I want to point out.
No, Trey, it doesn't matter what you're going to say from this point on, because I'm imagining you writing Ranma One Half fanfic.
I showed my wife Ranma One Half for the first time ever the other day, because the first season's up on Hulu.
Can you bring this to Daishokan? We need to have a segment where we read this during the panel.
No, I don't have it anymore. I don't have it anymore.
Oh, try and remember it and write it down.
No.
If you or anyone you know has a copy of Trey's Ranma One Half fanfiction, please send it to TRH on, what is it, contact?
The contact form at nerdentai.trhonline.com. There's a link
for
contact on
the
webpage.
What if I wrote a male slash fic between Ranma and Ryoga and put Trey's name on it? Would that be acceptable?
That, oh my God, I hate you so much. Anyways, but so what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with being a fanfic writer. It's just that Nick shouldn't be one. Let's be clear. I'm not criticizing people for writing fanfiction. I'm criticizing Nick.
Well, yeah, because I'm a terrible writer. That's just a fact.
I have no idea.
I've never
read your writing, Nick. I've watched your reviews, but never read your writing.
Oh, you've actually watched my reviews now. That's a step forward.
I watched your Valgrave one.
Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. I'll ask her opinion.
Suddenly, this pause just got
awkward. That was the most
depressing
awkward. Thing I've ever worked on. We should move forward.
So, yes, Nick, let's move forward. Whoa!
I am actually the exact age of the Buffy characters.
Yeah.
No, this is not, like, when I was a sophomore in high school, it was first season of the show, which they were sophomores. So literally, when I got kicked out of college, Buffy dropped out of college. I'm not kidding. There's a reason why I really loved that show. When I was working a terrible, soul-crushing minimum wage job, Buffy was working a terrible, soul-crushing minimum wage job. That show spoke to me on many levels. When I was having sex with a vampire with a chip in his head,
Dick, have you had sex with Booth? Because that would be kind of interesting.
Only John Wilkes.
Oh. Oh.
Six Ember Tyrannus.
Oh.
If there's one thing here we love at Nerd and Tie, it's really bad fan fictions and adaptations of really bad fan fictions, which is why we're excited that the My Immortal web series is a thing that exists, and that exists because of the work of one Mr. Brian McClellan, who has joined us today. Thank you, Brian, for coming on Nerd and Tie.
Thanks for having me.
So the first thing I want to ask, and I think really it's on everybody's mind, because anybody that's read the actual fan fiction My Immortal that's not in the right mindset is baffled by it. And I think everybody's baffled simply by why would you adapt My Immortal into a web series?
I know.
This doesn't seem like it's something that should actually exist, but it does, and it's glorious.
Especially now that we're, like, moving into a second season now. It all started about a couple years ago. I was doing part-time editing for an online magazine and also working at odd jobs on the side. And so I had a lot of free time to browse, and I found the TV Tropes page for My Immortal. And so, like, My Immortal came out in 2005, back when bad fan fiction was really a trendy thing online. And that's why it became so huge. Like, the time was right for it when we had, like, websites like godawful.net and all, like, the Snark Live Journal blogs. And so they all kind of leapt upon this thing. And then years passed between 2005 and now. And in the interim, what had happened was this fandom had built on TV Tropes about this fan fiction. And there's these, like, essays, like, buried into that site of these people just trying to, like, unpack and dissect all the themes and characters and just, like, strange elements of the fanfic. And so I was really kind of brought back, like, into the world, like, back into that, like, fandom about this, like, really horrible fanfiction in a way that was, like, kind of, like, they were really scholarly about it. And so I started looking online to see if they had been any YouTube adaptations. And there had been, and they're all terrible. Because you had just like high schoolers just gathered in a living room and like reciting lines from the fanfic.
It was more of a read through than an adaptation. Is
yeah, and the pacing is off because all like you have actors basically standing around waiting for the narration to catch up to them, and it's very off. And so I kept thinking. For some reason, I got thinking, if you were to adapt it, how would you adapt the fanfic? And I had this idea for a sort of an episodic series that basically set up the character from My Immortal Enemy as thinking she's super cool. And then something happens to reveal that she's not so cool. And that would be the entire series, like, from episode to episode. And that would be probably the best way to sort of get at the themes and the elements of the fanfic.
Now, are you one of the? Are you one? There's a lot of debate out there whether or not My Immortal is a legit bad fan fiction, or if it's some kind of piece of not really performance art, but if it's some kind of bizarre postmodern commentary about what high school culture was at the time. What camp are you in?
I'm sort of have a foot in both. I think it'd be magical if it was real. but the thing is, it's still kind of magical, even if it is a troll fic. There's parts of it that are so if you were someone writing it as a fake troll, there's parts of it that are really brilliantly constructed in it, like in terms of the badness. Yeah, so it almost doesn't like rob it of its quality.
There's a definite theme throughout it that it maintains. If it was actually truly just a troll fic, you'd think that it would go off completely on the rails, which it does sometimes, but it still manages to come back and maintain a story. Which brings me to my next question of, rather than just do a straight-up adaptation of it, of all of NOB's adventures, as it were, you mentioned you took on a very episodic formula to it. How did you decide which parts to adapt directly, because there's a lot of it that's not a direct adaptation of the fan fiction. I mean, there's a lot you can't do, and there's a lot you can do. How did you decide this part needs to be untouched, this part needs to be tweaked a little bit? to make it into the 6-episode web series that you made it into?
That's a hard question to answer just because it was such a process. Like, it kind of came about organically. The entire web series was sort of built out of that underlying idea of the Harry Draco situation, where Annabi is dating Draco, but then he falls in love with a vampire who's in love with him. And it basically initiates this complete collapse of Annabi's worldview. And sort of I wrote the web series built from that idea, and it kind of just came about. And I threw in the thing about the other Mary Sue in order to keep going with that, to really kind of throw into relief a lot of the elements of like Mary Sue's and Annabi herself. If that makes sense at all.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's and that's one thing that I really like involving fan fiction with the discussion of fan fiction is if the Mary Sue is a character that should be satirized, or if it's something that should be taken seriously. And I think with Ebony, I really enjoy the way that you've taken that Mary Sue type of character and made her into something tolerable.
Well, like, the really cool thing about Ennaby from the original fan fiction is that usually one of the qualities of Mary Sue's is that they're very boring and bland to read because it's just the author. It's just author wish fulfillment. But Ebony in the fanfic is such a huge, like, repellent character that she almost, like, crashes through the Mary Sue mirror and comes back around to being, like, a fascinating character.
Absolutely. And there's so much that happens in season one. I mean, it's weird to see that there's development of this Mary Sue character through season one. And we get to, I believe, season three, or episode three, pardon me. That you introduce two characters, one of them played, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe episode three was where Snap and Lupin gets introduced.
Yeah, that's Snap and Lupin's.
What were your, you of course play Lupin, and Jeff Stone plays Snap.
Yeah.
What were your inspirations for the banter? Because there's a lot of vaudeville going on there. There's a lot of just classic comedy, exchange is, I guess, is what I'm saying. What was some of the driving inspiration for you as a writer to bring those characters to life?
Those characters were a lot of fun to write, and their banter was just very sort of natural. Just the bumbling henchmen, kind of taken to sort of a logical extreme. A lot of the banter, Jeff comes from a comedy background. And a lot of it, like, there was parts of the dialogue that was very much, like, written, but a lot of it was, like, hey, let's improvise a scene and see where it goes. And so quite a big bit of the banter was really kind of the moment, just us going back and forth in that scene with poor Eli kind of staring at us the entire time.
Of course, Eli Turlson, the best Draco, I think, even better than Tom Felton, if you ask me.
He's such a good Draco.
He's phenomenal. Honestly, I've got to say everybody on this cast list is phenomenal. Jenna Foster Catlack is Hermione, who, honestly, I mean, if Emma Watson was to have a stand-in in any of the movies, I think the way that Jenna plays Hermione is phenomenal. She's one of the best Hermiones I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, Jenna's my favorite Hermione by far.
So now going on Snap and Lupin, and this is kind of segue. Now they were killed, but is there any chance we're going to see them in season two?
I can't talk about that because it would be spoilers.
It would be spoilers.
Sure.
Okay, that disappoints our. I'm sure that Trey, our producer, just sort of did a finger snap at an odd rats. But going into season two, now you ended season one with of course must not be named getting defeated. The big bad has been beaten. And then you put out a Kickstarter for season two,
yes.
Which was successful. And I believe everybody, Trey, I think everybody on the Nerd and Tie, we all kind of pitched.
I was the first backer.
You were the first backer.
It went from 0 to 1 when I backed that Kickstarter.
But were you at all, what was your reaction to seeing this outpouring of support for a season two for the My Immortal web series?
I was shocked. We were all shocked. We couldn't believe it.
Didn't think it was going to happen, or just not enough?
No, we had no idea that there would be enough fans out there sort of willing to help support us through, like, to basically fund a Kickstarter in order to do an entirely new season of what was this quick and dirty little web series we threw together in between projects. So that was pretty amazing.
Now, with the Kickstarter being a success, season two is happening. You just released a trailer for season two, which raises a lot of questions about what season two actually is, because from what I can tell, they're going to start a band, but there's someone trying to kill all the preps.
Yeah.
And where is season two going, so if you can talk about that?
There's a lot going on in season two, and it's going to be a good season. The main, as we've seen in the trailer, one of the main sort of villainous characters ends up being Tom Riddle, a.k.a. Satan, who shows up. Enaby and the gang start Gothic Bloody Rose 666 and try to get into the Battle of the Bands. And the only issue is there's about four demons running around killing students.
Now, was the script kind of pre-written before the Kickstarter happened, or did... was there a skeleton structure for it when the Kickstarter was put out? Was it fully written when the Kickstarter was kicked off? Where were you in the process of season two when the Kickstarter began?
Well, after season one, we had sort of... What happened was we said, okay, no season two, we're on to other things. But what happened was my sister, Kate, who she helped produce the first one and did a lot of roles, and she was a huge help in the first season. She came to me and she said, listen, if we were to do a season two, this is what I think would happen. And she proceeded to give sort of a skeleton structure about Tom Riddle showing up and sort of the drama that comes about because of that. And so when we ended up doing the Kickstarter and getting a lot of support for it, which was amazing, we ended up taking that initial story idea and then expanding on it to actually give it sort of plot hooks through it and like several different ideas. And that was sort of where it came from.
Okay, so your sister is a big contributor to that. Cast in season one, or is she a bigger part in season two?
She does have a part in season two. She actually plays Brittany the Prep for a single shot in episode four. She sticks her head in through the door to yell at Enaby about the Yule Ball, and then back in again.
Excellent. Now, I'm sure everybody out there, I mean, the Kickstarter succeeded. People are excited for season two. Season two is going to be good. What other projects do you have in store for Media Junkie Films?
We are hoping to do a feature next. Right now, we've been basically doing... all of our energy and time has been put into this shooting this season. We have been talking about what we're going to do next, most likely a feature and a couple of shorts, but nothing solid yet.
Now, can you give us a release date for season two of My Immortal, the web series, or is that sort of a...
Well, we are finishing principal shooting on March 2nd, and then it's just editing and special effects work. I'm hoping to have it out end of March, early April, the first episode. That's if everything goes well.
And of course, in the web series and film industry, that's always a possibility that anything could potentially happen to make it earlier or later. So
absolutely.
Well, Brian, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. We're all huge fans of My Immortal.
And Brian, actually, I've got one question. I just need you to verify that Canada does in fact exist.
Yes, it does. I'm sitting in it right now.
Thank you.
Well, just because we have one person that says it exists, I mean...
Now, you can never believe anything you hear on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. So. Right now, I could go on and find a Photoshop picture of Liam Neeson with dragon wings while playing an electric guitar, which actually sounds awesome.
I was going to say, he does that. That's what he does on Tuesday.
Should be an album cover for a gothic metal band, I think, if they ever... That was the thing that happened. Well, Brian, thank you so much for being on the show. We're huge fans. We loved having you, and we're all looking forward to My Immortal Season 2. Of course, as Brian said, My Immortal, the web series, Season 2, potential launch date of end of March, early April. And be on the lookout if you haven't checked out Season 1 yet. It's available on MyImmortalSeries.com. Check it out. It's very funny. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was fascinating. And I want to point out that Brian did just confirm Canada's existence.
Again, like we said, you can't trust anyone on the internet, Trey.
Whoa. My question is, what would be the next cosplay fad that you would like to see happen? Also, bonus points if you can spot a Hetalia Canada cosplay to prove to Nick and Fur that Canada exists.
No, there's not a single one in here.
Actually, okay, I want to say something. I was listening to old episodes, and apparently you guys talk about
it in free time.
Because I was comparing old episodes, and Izumi here referred to a Canadian Nick in the episode in referring to a cosplayer, which implies that he secretly believes in Canada.
Why, Nick? You betrayed me.
Everyone betrayed me. I'm done with this world.
All right, so what cosplays? Let's
go back to the... Okay.
What cosplay do you think would be fat?
Cosplay fat? Here's the thing. I don't like cosplay fads that much. Because I like seeing people kind of go out and do their own thing. And when I see a zillion of the same thing, it kind of terrifies me. But if I were to say that there's a fad that I would like to see, I think it would be cool to see a bunch of people try to be Godzilla monsters and just see interesting... No. I'm being, like, completely honest here.
I was taking you seriously.
I would love to see people, like, doing creative versions. Like, I not necessarily monster suits. If they want to do monster suits, that's cool. But if they want to do, like, kimonos inspired by Mothra...
I want to see a Mothra
like
who just slides along the floor of the convention on a skateboard.
I want to see a full-on Mechagodzilla. That's what I want to see. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be my pick for a costume.
Which version of Mechagodzilla?
Okay, so I'm thinking of cosplay fads, and I'm looking at the room of people in front of me. And I'm just saying, like, oh, 10th Doctors, Sora. Chris, how many years did you wear that Sora cosplay?
Too many.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think what I'd like to see, and this is obviously not totally self-serving, is an unconventional cosplay fad. I saw at least one unconventional cosplayer today. Yeah. Sure, it's the same one who's been the only one to ever do it, but...
It's who you basically get the character off of.
No, that is not true. I created Lynn Baxter for a project in 2003. I have the art and the dates and the photos that the proof is Lynn Baxter. That's why she's got a frickin' Baxter as her last name, because I later changed her nationality and I had to come up with a weird story to work it out.
Wow.
And I did not meet Jesus until years later. Well, it just happens.
You happen to look exactly like Jesus.
Well, no, not really, but... It's,
here's the thing, though.
I'm sorry, I happen to know a lot of short, dark-haired, angry lesbians.
All right, now, but let's be honest, Trey, you've been covering up for a lot of things. It's just like your whole thing with trying to censor the splendid
Zeus. For God's sake, Lynn's personality is based off of mine. How have none of you figured it out?
Because you're not a short, dark-haired, angry lesbian that I know of.
Well, no, but...
But I mean, like,
avatars are
you're part of that conspiracy to put down that webcomic, and now you're denying that you based this character on a person. This is just real.
Look, what? Your mom?
See, now what I want to see, in the near future, a lot of cosplays with ridiculous hair, and finally the Nicolas Cage cosplay circle will be complete. I want to see a Con Air cosplay. I want to see National Treasure. I want to see Wicker Man. I want to see Face Off.
But for the shortage on bald caps alone.
How did you burn?
Actually, let's see the Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, first.
Yeah, yeah, no, that would be.
Make it happen. That's my.
Hey, wait a minute.
Next live show. I want to see every single.
If someone cosplays Dr. Tenma from the ass.
No one heard you.
If someone cosplays Dr. Tenma from the Astro Boy movie, does that count as Nicolas Cage? Because
yes.
He did voice that.
Yep.
Nicolas Cage was Dr. Tenma. I want that to sink in.
Okay, well, no, it's as we go back to the community, Nicolas Cage is not a bad actor. He's just crazy.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage, bad or good?
He's just crazy.
He
was Superman, right?
Nicolas Cage. I'm a sexy cat. Sorry.
What do we got? Whoa,
whoa. We live in a magical world.
It's a wonderful world.
Magical world.
Wonderful enough where there's a lot of people in this on this wide Earth. Yes, and there's approximately 390 million people living in the country of America.
Oh, no.
If you're probably more than 50% of those Americans, you probably don't really know what HTML actually means. If you're probably, I would say, maybe 30% of Americans, you know that HTML means a hypertext markup language and is the main markup language for things like web pages and other web browser stuff. However, according to a new study by VoucherCloud and published in the LA Times, if you are 11% of Americans, you think that HTML is something that you can catch by having unprotected sex.
Yes. Actually, I want to say the number is actually 1 in 9,
which is approximately
11%. Time Magazine annoyingly said that 1 in 9 was exactly 11%,
which it is not.
Is angering to. Staggering to me, but so much. It's just basic math. You just use the word approximately. All you had to use was the word approximately.
But that's right. 11% of – or one in every nine Americans think that HTML is a sexually transmitted disease, according to this VoucherCloud survey, which surveyed 2,392 people ages 18 or older. One in nine think HTML is an STD. That's not the only thing they thought.
It's funny that
23% – 23% thought that an MP3 was a Star Wars robot. 18% of those people identified a Blu-ray as a marine animal. 15% said they believed software is a term for comfortable clothing. And 12% said USB is the acronym for a European country.
Well, it's the United States of Belgium, isn't it? I don't...
We now know exactly what percentage of our population is over the age of 70.
Oh my god. Like, I'm sorry, it's my mother who knows what USB is. She doesn't know what USB stands for, you know, universal serial bus, but she knows that it's the plug on her computer that she, you know, plugs devices into, you know?
I think, to be fair, most people might not know what these are actually, like, an abbreviation for, but I always assume they knew what they did, not...
Right, my mom knows what an MP3 is. She will refer to non-MP3 audio files as MP3s, but at least she's in the ballpark.
Right.
And you know, I mean, I honestly, for some reason, I always have to look up what that HTML means, hypertext markup language, but I know how to use it.
Well, I know that it stands for hypertext markup language, but I also minored in web development and design in college.
But most of the people who knew HTML coding in my high school were the least likely people to get an STD. Oh.
Well, I can you know, say that I knew what HTML was in high school, and I also was in the category of least likely to get an STD.
This might be my favorite story of the Fortnite.
Oh my god!
This is just.
Oh my god! How can like? I'm sorry. This goes in the category of like the people who complain on Twitter using their mobile phones about the science and cosmos because it goes against creation science, like those people.
I saw one of those posts and it nearly sent me through the roof with rage.
Where I don't understand how these people live in this world. Like
Neil deGrasse Tyson lied on TV. Doesn't he know God made the moon?
Oh my god. These people deny the very rules of relativity which are required for their phones to work that they're complaining through.
I know.
I think my
quote there was from an actual tweet. I do not have anything against Christians. I have everything against people who are willfully ignorant.
I just think it's ridiculous that almost 1 in 4 people don't know what an MP3 was.
Okay, I'm just saying that anybody who... Okay, so this is... I know this is an aside more on the cosmos thing, but anybody who denies the basic science behind, you know, relativity and things like that, and the concepts that are the very technology we're using are based off of, if they deny that science, would you just take the technology away from them?
Agreed.
They should just have it slapped out of their hands and confiscated.
I could get behind this.
There was a guy on I want to say the Daily Show a while back, who was a scientist who suggested that if you don't believe in evolution, you shouldn't get flu shots. Or
that's going a bit far.
Or vaccinations in general.
No, you see, we don't. No. We want even the idiots to get vaccinated because that saves the rest of us. Oh my God, measles are back in New York. Measles.
Hey, remember, tuberculosis is going to make a comeback soon because people didn't follow through with all of their, getting their injections done on that. So, TB, it's going to make a comeback.
Herd immunity is a very complicated thing, and we need enough people to be vaccinated to keep out diseases out of our population, and that saves us long term. So those who can't be vaccinated are protected if everyone who can be vaccinated is. This is basic concepts, people. This is how we prevent the zombie apocalypse.
But what if what if it makes our children autistic?
It doesn't.
Proof of that. There's proof.
Even the people whose names on the paper say it doesn't. I hate you, Nick.
I'm just providing. I don't believe it.
What are you providing a fair and balanced argument?
I'm providing a fair and fuck it. Sorry.
No, don't. You might get HTML.
We have time for two questions.
We have time for two questions from the audience. This guy with that epic beard.
What do you want to know, man?
A bit of a random question, but have you guys seen the new Ronald McDonald redesign?
No.
Oh. It's amazing.
We'll okay, next question! Langland!
Oh, so yeah, I don't know what to say.
This is just like every letter you write to us.
I know, I just see random bullshit, and I always want to see if Trey will correct
me. Alright, next! That person in the striped shirt.
So if Transformers and Ava units...
Don't mention Transformers.
Shut up.
Just hold on, where is Miley Cyrus in all of this with her freaking wrecking ball?
Who's Miley Cyrus?
Yeah, right. Next question.
My favorite host of MST3K is Crotee Robot.
Woo! I don't blame her.
Which one?
Yeah, there's two.
Which one?
Oh, yeah, which you're Jack?
Trace
there are two
or
Bill Corbett.
I think it's the second one.
Bill Corbett.
Bill Corbett's fine, but who likes him over Trace? Oh my God.
Yeah, right. Trace is good.
Because the Trace episodes was Dr. Forrester, and Dr. Forrester is the best character.
I didn't like in Soul Taker when they did that throw out of, your voice sounds different. Oh, you changed the bowling pin.
That was great.
Actually, they had changed the bowling
pin. They did. Yep.
It's a different size. All right, so, Langley, do you have another question?
I'm going to say something between her and Nick. You guys get passports. I'm going to haul your asses to Canada to prove it exists.
It doesn't exist because I've never been there.
Okay, let me explain. Canada is a fictional country that was invented in the Marvel Universe so that they would have somewhere for the Guardian to come from.
Yeah, exactly.
The Guardian needs to have a country he protects, so they made up Canada.
I am going to twist your nipple right now.
If you would like to drop fan art of Trey twisting his nipple... Please write to us at nerdandtie.thronline.com.
And click on the contact form.
Sign us up, picture. Whoa!
Thanks for joining us on this journey throughout the last year of Nerd and Tie, and I hope you'll join us another year. Remember, you can always subscribe to the podcast on either Stitcher by going to Stitcher.com, and you can also download their iOS or Android app. Also, you can always find us on the iTunes Store. Please subscribe to us through either one of these services. And consider rating and reviewing us while you're there, because we're awesome. I'm awesome. You're awesome. We'll join you in a week with a brand new regular episode. And hope y'all have a good night.